Welcome to tonight's episode of Pivotal Change. We have a very fun conversation planned for you tonight. We are going to be talking about one of the most important, one of the most personal and high pressure areas of life, money. And we're not just talking about like markets or retirement accounts and what's happening in global economics, but we're going to talk more about not just insurance and financial planning and estate planning, but we're going to do all of those things and how those decisions come into play in your life with your families, your business as a business owner or executive. In working on all of your structural needs. I hope you have your pen and paper ready. I'm your host, William Kahn, and I've brought a special guest, David Kleinman, to the show tonight. He is of Kleinman Financial, which is a son-father business based out of New York and New Jersey. And they have all kinds of experience in hedge fund industry and now working with family-led financial services. So, David, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, William.
It's my pleasure. And one of the things I want to do, David, is before we really get kind of heavy into it, talking about the planning and the strategy, what first drew you into the world of finance and financial markets?
Well, William, I was always very fascinated by how financial markets worked and how they reflected human behavior. And what really drew me in was seeing what the impact of good financial decisions or poor ones can have on people's lives. I had my own financial struggles in a different career, and that really led me to see the value of proper planning and a value assessment and all the good stuff that you and I do with our clients. I did have the opportunity to work in a hedge fund world early on before that, where I did gain a pretty deep appreciation for investing and risk management and how markets work. But now I wanted to apply it on the individual side because it's really incredible on how much really financial literacy does not exist in the general society. People just don't know where to go and who to trust and who to talk to. In the hedge fund world, we had a big was part of was part of the hedge fund that of people that stole money from people, the Madoffs of the world. And so that just made it even more important to find the person that you can trust, build a relationship with, and that someone that knows who they are, does a value assessment, and looks after them properly.
Yeah, that's a very good story and a very good reason to get into that. And I think trust is so huge. It used to be much more transactional, and now today it's much more relational and trust-based. And speaking of your hedge fund background as well, I'm sure there were a lot of lessons that you took from there. Can you teach us a little bit about, in your time, what you've learned about things like risk and discipline and just the general financial decision making?
Well, I think the most important area that the hedge fund industry taught me was that risk isn't something you eliminate. It's something that you need to manage. It's something that you have to recognize. We call it the certainty of uncertainty. We know something's going to happen in whether it's a business economy or it's your personal finances. We know that something's going to happen that you're not expecting, that you're not predicting, and it's impossible to predict. If we had a crystal ball, I wouldn't be sitting with you here. I'd be a king of the world, and that, I'd be financially, more than even Musk is right now, is a trillionaire. But markets are unpredictable, and so you realize quickly that you need to manage that risk, and that's also the importance of just having discipline. You don't want to like we don't want to have somebody like, oh, the market goes down a little bit, and right away you panic. You have to know, you have to stay for it, you have to be disciplined, you have to stay with your strategies. If thoughtfully and properly done firsthand at the time, you got to stick with those because you know the market's always going to be up and down, but your strategy's it has to stay the same. So I work a lot today. I look a lot with families and business owners. We don't try to spend our time trying to predict the next market move. What we do is we build those financial strategies with the participants' values, because what we call ourselves behavioral financial advisors. We are also looking at our first step with anybody is to do a value assessment so that we can withstand that uncertainty and we prepare for multiple outcomes instead of just betting on one.
I like that. And you said, what was the phrase, behavioral financial, what was that?
Advisors. It's a designation
Advisors.
that we had that we were qualified for as well. So we have a little card game that we play, the deck of 52 cards with 52 values, and that's how we start with every client, just to get them to and most of the clients never even had that exercise, but it's super important just to get the values. Like, do they want to retire early? Do they want to leave a legacy? Do they want adventure? What is it they're looking to accomplish?
I like that. And I really appreciate your comments a lot about the risk and the discipline. And, you know, I have several financial advisor friends and associates, and I think the number one thing they complain about is the clients that can't sit still and have to keep trying to intervene in the plan that they laid out for a lack of discipline or impatience or just anxiety of the market in general. And I think the relationship building and the trust where you're saying, hey, just stick with the plan, stick with the plan, is really important. And you can become almost a counselor to some of these people at times.
Yeah,
So
exactly. It
that's
doesn't mean that you stick with the plan all the time. You always are reevaluating and resetting, but the basic strategy stays the same.
Yes, a great point. Yeah, you always got to leave room to pivot, right? So that's a great point. So let's talk a little bit about maybe was there any specific pivotal moment that led you to join your son at Climate Financial? Like what was the trigger to make you make the leap?
Well, I think the pivotal moment came when I saw that Yair wasn't just building a financial services firm. He was building it around the right values. And that's really where I wanted to be. A little bit later on in life, I'm a little bit older than you two, I think. You want to do what you want to do. You don't want, you don't need to financially, you don't need to do those areas that don't appeal to you. But he had a clear vision of putting the clients first, focusing on relationships, talking about values, and helping people make financial decisions with confidence rather than fear, and just generating financial literacy, which is so lacking. And after spending so many years in the industry, I knew how important it was to work with people who share your same philosophy. It was an interesting idea as well, because when we started working with him, I found out that we were actually a lot more similar than I expected. I knew that we had shared a lot of the same values, but then just the way that we looked at the world, it became a lot. Became clear that we had that same type of outlook, which was kind of surprising for me and one of the advantages of having a son-father business. But the more we talked about the future of the business, it became clear that our strengths complemented each other also. He brought fresh ideas, energy from a young guy. He wasn't even married then, I don't think, and more of a forward-looking approach, taking in all the different technologies and, always trying something new. But I brought in the decades of experience helping families and business owners navigate complex financial decisions.
Yes, I love that, and I love how you started off really talking about the vision and the values and that type of alignment. And then you did make a point. You know, those are all big things for me. I do a lot of leadership consultation and training, and really being able to gather people around you. And your son was able to gather his own father, which is an incredible testimony for him. And what you've said about the way that the support and everything comes out with basically the freedom and clarity in life. I think a lot of people could take that message from you and your son and probably put a heavy dose of it into their own life. So I really, really like that a lot. So working with that son, father, son dynamic, that firm, has it changed the way that you've viewed your own trust and responsibility in any capacity? Because again, you raised this guy, right? And then now he's technically the owner running the shop.
Yeah, I mean, really working in this son-father financial services firm, reminds us every day that trust was really our most valuable assets. Clients aren't just trusting one advisor. They're trusting our family name, our reputation, and the values that we've built the business around. It also creates a unique sense of responsibility. We have to earn that trust every single day by putting our clients' interests first. Communicating honestly, and many times I'm sure you're also aware, William, it's just the communication sometimes that's important. Just letting the client know that you're thinking about them. You may not have an answer today, but they're still with you, and that you're following up with them, and they're just not being ignored. So that's all very important, especially when your family name is on the door, that every decision matters. And I think the clients appreciate that continuity. I say many times my son will say, "Oh, my father may not be around because I'm old, but he'll be around."
I like it. No, I mean, very well said, and I appreciate you walking us through that. Yeah, that's very good for us to really just contemplate on those things, and people take those lessons back, and again, like I said, apply it for their own life. So let's talk about people coming in. You said trusting the family name. They've decided to trust the family, the name. They say, "Hey, we want Climen to help us out." They come in here, these families, they're feeling some type of financial uncertainty. They're feeling some type of necessity to come and plan. What are they most worried about beneath the surface, other than like, hey, what's my money doing for me? What's the real worry under there?
Well, typically we'll find that, and I'm sure you've seen this also, William, that the financial concerns that they first bring up is not the real concern. They might say, "Oh, I'm worried about the stock market, I'm worried about inflation, I'm worried about taxes or retirement," but really there's an underlying concern about, am I going to be okay? Am I going to run out of money? What's going to happen if I need long-term care? What facility I'm going to be able to go to? Am I going to be able to help my children if they need that? Are they going to be able to take care of their own family or maintain their own lifestyle with dignity? Or again, and maybe it's going to be an unexpected health issue or economic downturn. That's the fear I think that people feel. And when they talk about just the market, inflation, that's not really, the main fear that they're having. Business owners will often worry about whether everything they've worked so hard to build will truly provide security for their family and survive beyond them. So financial uncertainty is really just about money. It's about confidence. It's about wanting clarity in a world that feels unpredictable. And that's why it's, again, so important to come down with a financial plan, but involving all aspects of their family life, whether maybe they need a CPA. And we'll do that as we do our financial
Could
fact
I
finding.
jump in real quick, David,
Yeah, please.
because I want to make a real point. So it sounds like, tell me if this is fair for me to summarize it this way, that the real under the surface issue is maybe a change in perspective in life. They've realized something about health and future and kids or grandkids and legacy, and their perspective have changed from, am I making enough money, to what if? Is that a fair enough assessment?
Exactly. That's really
Thanks.
the fear that people have.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is let's go ahead and take a moment, just put a pin in this conversation. We're going to jump to commercial break, and we're going to be right back for more Pivotal Change and more David Kleinman right after these messages.
I usually talk a lot, sorry.
Welcome back from the break, and thanks for sticking with us. Before we proceed with this exceptional conversation, I want to make sure you know where to find us. You can find Pivotal Change, and you can stay connected to this show and all of the shows on Now Media TV. You can do it live or on demand anytime that you want. You just go to nowmedia.tv, or you can download the Now Media TV app. It's on Roku, it's on iOS, and you can find this show and many others. You get business, culture, you get economics, you get sports even. You can find everything you want in all of your favorite shows, especially this one, right there on the website or in podcast version if you'd like. So if you can't watch us and you're just driving or you're on the treadmill, go ahead and pull up the podcast and enjoy all of your favorite shows. So we're going to circle back now with David Kleinman of Kleinman Financial. He's been dropping some real nuggets for us. And so I want to ask one question about your client base. We talked about, what was underneath the surface right before we transitioned to break. Tell me about this. Why do so many people delay their financial planning? Why do they not start early? There's a lot of recommendations about starting your kid on Roth IRAs as soon as you can. But why are all these adults who have these careers and they're starting to amass wealth, why are people delaying?
Well, William, I know you know this, and I think it's just basic human nature. Most people don't avoid financial planning because they don't care. They do care, but it's life gets busy. The decisions feel overwhelming. They always assume they're going to have it to more time down the road, and they don't. Sometimes they don't even know where to begin. So that all feels very overwhelming for people, and that's why they don't have that sense of urgency that. Really, that's really required until something happens, until that's maybe there's a new child or a health issue, especially during COVID when, when we had there was a lot of fatality, then people started, thinking, oh, that could really happen to me. It was like unexpected fatality. So that created that urgency within people. But now we're sort of back to the normal way of life. And that's why I encourage people, don't wait for the crisis. The best time to create a financial plan is when life is going well, because that's when you have the greatest opportunity to make intentional decisions that will align with your goals and values. Then when the ex unexpected happens, as we said, the uncertainty of uncertainty, you'll have a roadmap to guide you with confidence instead of panicking and wondering, scrambling to put it into place when, sometimes it's too late.
I think that's great advice. And as you were saying that about why people delay, and especially talking about doing it when things are good and not when things start to go bad, we see a lot of people get really serious about their weight loss or their exercise when the doctor says, "Hey, you're overweight and about to have a heart attack." That's a slap in the face, and they go to the gym, and these people turn their lives around. And financial planning is the same. You're like, "Oh no, I'm on the brink of some type of collapse or forfeiture or some major, who knows, volatility, and now I'm about to be in trouble. I'm going to go to the gym, the financial gym, and get my plan together." I think that comes down maybe to some prediction. People just don't take the time to try to do prediction. But of course, prediction of markets and stocks can be pretty dangerous. You can always have a war or a rumor of war or some political turnover, or even some major technological revolution like what we've seen with AI in the last several years. So, David, why is prediction such a dangerous place to really try to build a financial strategy?
Well, as you've already pointed out, William, predictions are by their nature uncertain. Nobody, not economists, market analysts, financial advisors, can consistently predict what the markets or interest rates or the economy are going to do next. Yet many people will build their financial decisions around what they think will happen instead of preparing for what could happen. I have a brother that's a stockbroker. Sometimes he'll give me advice. I know as soon as I buy the stock, whatever it is, it's going to go down. That I know is certain, but I have to stick with it, and then it can come back up, or it doesn't have to come back. But the danger is that when your strategy depends on one prediction being right, you've got all your eggs in one basket, then you're certainly very vulnerable if it doesn't go that way.
Yeah, those are great points. Yes, and I think we've all learned from childhood up, in many categories, do not put all your eggs in one basket. And if people ever go look at your website and things like that, they're going to see that you've got a lot of baskets that you deal in, and you guys can do that. And it helps you avoid volatility to kind of diversify and stuff. So, from the Kleinman financial perspective, what does discipline look like when markets are volatile or people start getting conflicted with their choices?
So again, I mean, it all goes back to what your values are. So that's where we come up with your plan, we have our strategy, and that means that you have to be disciplined during that market volatility, which we talk about right from the beginning. We know that that's going to happen. So we're building that into our plan, and that means you've got to stay focused on your plan instead of reacting to the emotions of the moment. When markets are moving dramatically, there's often more noise than clarity. There's like headlines, opinions, predictions, advice coming from every direction. The challenge is separating information from distraction. We knew ourselves, like Trump would come up with, say, one thing and the markets would go one way. The next day it would be something else, the market would go a different way. That doesn't really affect my plan, my strategy, my long-term goals. You've got to let that fear or excitement that you have not let you drive the decisions.
I like that. So fear and excitement, two very powerful emotions. I give entire speeches on fear, and I really deal with the energy and appropriateness of excitement as well. So how do you guys help your clients separate those emotional reactions from actual strategic decisions?
So again, I mean, the first step is just recognizing that emotions are a natural part of our financial decision making. We're human beings. We're part of emo. We have emotions. That's what there is going to be. We are going to have that. Money is also, like we've talked about, money is deeply connected to people's hopes and their fears and families and future goals. So it's unrealistic to think emotions won't be involved. They will be. The key is to make sure the emotions don't become the driver of decision. So we help our clients separate the emotion from strategy by starting with clarity. Since we've taken the time to understand what they're trying to accomplish, if they have like an emotional reaction, we'll try to remind them, or we will remind them, why did we decide on this in the first place? Where were we trying to go? And again, it doesn't mean that it's set in stone. We will pivot, we will make adjustments. That's part of the plan as well. But when you have a clear plan built around your goals and values, it's much easier to evaluate decisions objectively.
I like that a lot. So you take them back to the beginning, you take them back to the reason they started, what the vision and the values are, and that helps center them instead of keep them volatile themselves with their own emotional reactions. Can you think of maybe just real quick one or two just major actions or decisions people take based on fear?
Well, one of the most common examples is just reacting to market downturns by selling your investments after a significant decline. Don't forget, you're not losing money. Even if the market price goes down, you don't lose money until you sell. Until once you sell, you've locked that loss in. So that fear is allowing that loss to occur. Without selling, you haven't had any kind of loss. And now you could just sit by the side and you can just wait for it to go back. And a lot of times what we'll recommend is to take a loan against your portfolio. That way you don't have to sell it. You don't have to worry about your capital gains. There are also tax harvesting. There are strategies that you want to take, but not based on fear. And that's what another fear-based decision is, keeping too much money on the sidelines because of uncertainty. We see people will keep it in their checking account. I spoke to someone yesterday. He's probably got $250,000 in his basically no yield savings account with one of the big banks that doesn't offer anything. They have a huge amount of cash because they were afraid he wants to buy a house at some point, so he wants to make sure it's liquid. I told him the first thing you do, open up a high yield savings account, you'll get a couple percentages. I mean, it's crazy that they people don't do it.
That's we see that all the time. Their money's not working for them. You at time value of money, you're actually losing money in the long run, and it's just crazy. So yeah, those savings accounts, like you said, high interest yield, we tell people this is where you want to park it, and it's as close to liquid as you can get, so there's good ways to that. That's really good. So kind of moving along here, you just talked about a specific account. Obviously we're not giving out financial advice on the TV show, but what does a strong financial plan need to include beyond just like, well, invest in these couple of stocks and portfolios?
Well, a strong financial plan has to look at the entire picture. So we're going to bring in our partners, somebody like yourself, William, a CPA will bring in a trust and estate attorney as well. Maybe it'll be even a property and casualty broker so that he can look at maybe you don't have umbrella insurance, and your own home insurance or your car insurance, because we want to be one piece of the pie. We want to be like a family office so that we're putting together. And we're going to only be one part of a bigger strategy. So a comprehensive plan has to include understanding your goals, managing your risk, protecting your family, preparing for taxes, planning for retirement, creating an estate strategy, and making sure your assets are structured in a way that supports your long-term vision with all the other partners as well. And for business owners, it also means looking at the business itself.
That's beautiful. I love that. So one thing that, we kind of talked off air about the combination of taxes, retirement, insurance, estate planning, and just investments, and how most people have all these separate disconnected people, but they really need to be working together, not separately. Can you tell us a little bit more about how they work together? Just real quick answer before we have to cut to break.
So taxes and retirement planning, insurance, estate planning, investing they're all connected. And decisions in one area can have a major impact on the other. For example, an investment decision isn't just about potential growth. It also involves understanding your taxes, liquidity needs, risk, and how that money fits into a person's retirement strategy. So I say the same thing, just briefly, you can set up a 401k, you could save a doctor could save a lot of money on taxes. But you have to make sure the cash flow is enough to support your lifestyle and that you're not just throwing it all in because you want to save that money on taxes.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Before we cut to commercial break, how do people get a hold of you, by the way? Like, if they want to look up you or Climbing Financial and even use your services, where do they find you?
So just come to our website. It's climbinfinancial.com, climbin with a Y, KLYMAN. You call me on my cell phone. It's 201-898-6960. You can call or you can text. Or you can call me, or you can book an appointment on my Calendly. It's just I can put that into the program. Best way is just to call me or text me. It just comes to me directly.
Love it. That's perfect. Everyone else, you sit tight. We're at the halfway point. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Two, one.
We are halfway through this episode of Pivotal Change, and we are just having a wonderful conversation with David Kleiman of Kleiman Financial, and he has dropped some real nuggets for us to really understand the importance of and the structure and how things are supposed to be working together and all for your benefit, and making a lot of really important notations on discipline and trusting the plan, but sticking to your values and being able to pivot if necessary. So if you did not get to catch the first half of the episode, you need to go back and watch it. For those of you sticking with us, get your pen and paper ready, because we're going to keep having more wisdom for you. So David, let's jump off on the next question of what does it truly mean to protect what a family has built from your perspective?
Okay, thank you, William. So just to redefine a little bit, protecting what a family has built is about recognizing that wealth isn't just measured by assets. It's measured by the years of hard work, sacrifice, decisions, and the values. Again, coming always back to values that created those assets in the first place. And for many families, their greatest asset may not be their investment portfolio. And many times it's not. It's their income. It's their business, their ability to provide for their loved ones, and the opportunities they want to create for the future generation. So protection means asking important questions. What happens if something unexpected occurs? How would the family be impacted? Is there a plan in place to preserve the lifestyle they've worked so hard to create? And this can involve many different areas, having the right insurance coverage, whether it's going to be permanent insurance or it's going to be term insurance or some combination of the two, or long-term care. You know, how does all of that fit in? It's talking about creating an estate plan. It's managing the investment risk. It's preparing for taxes, which insurance can help with as well, and ensuring that assets are transferred according to the family's wishes, which sometimes they don't think about until the very end.
Right. Right. Yeah, we see all the time, especially just I'll isolate it from a tax perspective, where maybe a grandparent gets real sick or something like that. So they want to start giving away all of their stuff to their kids and grandkids. And we're like, please, especially real property and stuff. We're like, please, please don't do that. Just wait. Let us get a plan. Let us get your estate planners. And you mentioned the insurance side as well. And I think people really just they underutilize insurances, life insurances, and things like that. So as far as estate planning and life insurance goes, what do you see people underestimate in that arena?
So again, I think life insurance, when they come to that, not estimating the importance of it, comes back to what we talked about before. They kick it down the road. It's a can they kick down the road. They think they've got plenty of time to address it. But, you know, premiums are based on three factors. One is health, one is age, and one is male, female. So the older you are, the more expensive it is. So by kicking it down the road, you're just causing it to be more expensive. And a lot of times a misconception is that life insurance is only about a death benefit. But the industry has evolved way beyond that person knocking on your door and collecting the $5 for just having like some term insurance policy. It's a lot more now about protecting the people and the plans that depend on you. And for a family, it can provide really financial stability. It can help replace lost income. It protects the spouse and children and ensures that the goal you've worked towards can still happen, even if life takes an unexpected turn. But with permanent insurance also, there's a lot more that you can do. Some of the carriers will have what's called living benefits. You're able to take out from the death benefit in your life if a person got sick or ill, or you need it for long-term care down the road. We had a client, $1 million policy, had a very serious heart attack, only after paying 14 months, and the carrier gave him $855,000 because of that heart attack. He's fine right now, but because of the living benefit option, you know, he came about with a huge gain on that. I mean, look, he did have a heart attack, which you don't want to have, but it's good to have that money as well.
Right. Yeah. And so a lot of people don't understand accessing that death benefit while alive, what the ramifications and you know, again, there's all kinds of tax benefits. So that's an area where you could literally sit down with a client, walk them through step by step, bring them to full understanding, and then execute. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, with their input, we're trying to educate people so that they are fully aware of what the options are. I always say whatever they want to spend on insurance, it has to fit their budget. It can't be something that's going to stress them out. It's a set it and forget it, but it's got to be something that's going to be worthwhile down the road, and showing what the advantages are and the cash value that can build and the living benefits I talked about. You know, all of that is part of the strategy and the planning that we've spoken about up till now.
I like it. And so dealing with some of these families here, you know, you get a lot of people that have been pretty successful and they're starting to build some real wealth. What are some of the most, or maybe the most common gap you see in their planning or structure?
So the key again is always to start with the planning, not with the fear. Forget about the fear. That doesn't work. Insurance should never be about creating anxiety or convincing someone to buy something that they don't need. It should be about understanding what someone is trying to protect and determining whether insurance is the right tool to help accomplish that goal. So the best insurance conversations begin with questions. What would happen if something unexpected occurred? Who depends on your income? What goals would you want to make sure continue no matter what happens? So again, we're talking about strategy, we're talking about planning, how it works with everything else, with their investments, with all their with their other strategies, with their other professionals that they work together. So we want to come up with one consistent strategy that will work for everything. And a lot of times you'll use also the insurance can pay those estate taxes that will come after the person passes away. So instead of paying dollar for dollar for the estate taxes, you're paying pennies on the dollar for that.
That's a great point. And so, is there much of a difference you see between dealing with business owners and just high earners, high net worth individuals, that are not their own entrepreneurs or business owners?
So again, successful families and business owners are often very good at building wealth, but neither one sometimes will take the time to create a strategy for protecting, managing, and transferring that wealth, especially for business owners. The business is really their largest asset, but many don't have a clear plan for what happens next. They may have spent decades building a successful company, but haven't addressed succession planning, key person protection, or how the business fits into their overall personal financial goals.
I think the key person fallacy and the key person dependency cripples a lot of business owners. I think that's a great point that you just drew out, and having a plan for that and the replacement so that hopefully even after you're gone or step out, that can continue on to fuel the estate planning and the legacy that you want to leave. And of course, taxes at any transitional point in life, taxes become an important issue. Where are some places where you see taxes maybe quietly erode the wealth that people think that they're doing, but they just planned after the fact instead of all along the way?
Well, as we know, William, you are as a CPA, you know this. Taxes are one of the biggest expenses people will face over their lifetime, or estate taxes after they pass away. So, but yet they are often treated as an afterthought. They'll figure that taxes will be paid somehow, somewhere. They're not really thinking about it because it's not really out of their pocket today. And many people will focus on just growing their wealth, but don't spend enough time thinking about how efficiently that wealth will be used, protected, and transferred. So they can make, you can make a huge amount of money on your portfolio, perhaps, but if you're paying a huge capital gains tax, what's really the point? So you want to make those tax decisions, though, years before the actual tax bill arrives. That's really what is super critical. And the way assets are structured, the types of accounts someone uses, setting up the trust so that's out of your estate, when you take income, how you take income, what's the smartest way to take income, and how to plan for retirement, all have significant tax implications, have to be decided many years before.
No, that is great. I mean, you and I are speaking same language, and it's great for us to understand that, why, and hopefully help explain this here, why it's important for like account titling, for beneficiary listing, just all of your estate documents being in the road, and just your financial goals be clearly laid out. All of those have to be coordinated. Can you explain a little bit more of the why that's so important to people?
Well, again, any financial plan is only as strong as the connection between all of its moving parts. And many people often don't realize that how their accounts are titled, who they name as beneficiaries, and what their legal documents say can have a major impact on whether their wishes are actually carried out. And not only that, William, it has to be updated as you go along. Like you may have a client, oh, I've looked after it with my trust and estate attorney, it's all set. Well, when was the last time you went over it and you updated it? You've had some major changes, especially if there's a second marriage, it becomes very tricky. And that's very important to make sure that everything is as clear as it can be.
I like that. So you're kind of helping us explain that there's times for us to sit down and review these when we have these major life changes. That's everything from marriage to children to some explosive business growth, retirement, a divorce, any type of major illness, any of that kind of stuff. You need to hit the pause button, review the plan is kind of what it sounds like you're saying. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay, so right before we bridge to the next gap, maybe just a quick 30-second response. How do you help have that difficult conversation with the families that come in your office? What's the lead in to help them understand the difficult conversation that money and legacy and the responsibility around it's going to have?
So this is really the trickiest part of the whole relationship, to tell you the truth. And I think that's why you find many, many advisors that don't even address this because they don't know how to approach it. So we'll sit down with that conversation and we'll talk about those questions we've talked about again. What about, it's always going to be based on values. What matters most to their family? What do they want their wealth to accomplish? What values do we want to pass on to the next generation? When the
Wow.
family's
So you
focused only
start the
on transfer,
conversation. You start the conversation with values, and
correct.
that makes it no longer uncomfortable because people ultimately explore and know what their values are. I think that's pretty genius, and I don't think there's a lot of people out there doing that. Let's go ahead and cut to commercial break. We'll be back with David right after this. You sit tight, and Pivotal Change will return in just a moment.
One, go.
Welcome back to Pivotal Change and the final segment of the night. I'm your host, William Kahn, and I want to make sure you know where to find Pivotal Change and all of the other programming on Now Media TV. Very simple, nowmedia.tv on the internet. You go there and you can find the entire list of all of our episodes, shows, content, entertainment, culture, music, business. It's bilingual, it's both Spanish and English. You can get us anytime, anywhere, on demand, including podcasts, including your iOS system, your Roku, by downloading the Now Media TV app. Go ahead in there and find us and listen anytime you please. So, David, let's keep talking finances here. We've talked a lot about values, we've talked a lot about trust. And so, one of the things that is really important is there's so much in this world that just feels like it's transactional. It's like we're buying a cheeseburger at a fast food place. What makes your advice feel trustworthy instead of transactional?
So, William, this is super important, of course. I think trust is built when people feel that you truly understand them before you ever recommend any solution. You know, it's kind of, you know, it might be a little antiquated, but people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And
Yes.
that's really true. And financial advice will become transactional when the conversation just talks about products and numbers or sales, you know, but it becomes meaningful when you start with listening and understanding. And I always tell the clients, I'm giving you the same advice I give to you, to myself and to my own children, my own family. That's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to take the time to learn the client's story. As we talked about, we have our card game. We are going to find out about their goals, their concerns, their family, their business, what they're trying to accomplish. And then the advice will be a reflection of that.
I think that's fantastic. And the fact that you are taking the time to show the care by learning about them, that's a highest form of caring. It's like, I want to learn and actually know you. And then I'm going to treat you the same way I'm going to treat my family and financial advice. If it's not a good recommendation for them, I'm not bringing it to you. And I think so many people, like you said, jump straight into the numbers like, oh, you need this account and this investment. And they're just feel like they're selling a product at that point. And I don't think that's as healthy. So, from the other side of the aisle, let's move across the table from the perspective of the client. People are evaluating their financial professionals. How are they ultimately determining that they're aligned with that you're aligned with their needs?
Well, the potential client has to evaluate the process.
Mm-hmm.
Do they start by does the advisor start by asking questions and listening, or do they immediately jump into recommendation? A good
Yeah.
advisor should want to understand the full picture before suggesting a strategy.
That is perfect. They just jump into the presentation and the product, or do they take the time to learn? And I think that's what a lot of us want to do. So, what role does independence ultimately play in building trust with the clients?
Well, it's a very important role in building trust. I had a client yesterday. We're talking about maybe some disability insurance, and they're having some information that's not actually accurate. And then he says to me, well, that's because they were captive and they could only offer one product. Whereas I'm able to look at the whole market after getting to know who they are, what they're all about, and what they're looking for. I can scour the market and look for what's the best product that fits them in. If I'm only able to sell one product, or I'm only representing one product because maybe it pays me the highest commission, that's not going to benefit my client.
I really like what you're saying is that you have the independence to move from product to product, offering to offering, and literally you can say whatever is appropriate on our menu of services is what I'm going to offer you, where everyone else is limited to one or two products, so they're forced to sell that even if it's not the best choice, best fit for the client. So the fact that Climate Financial has that independence probably is putting them head and shoulders above a lot of the competition. Okay, so let's talk more about that families that come to you, those people where they feel like, hey, we're making money, but at the same time, I don't feel like I'm making progress in life. Does that sound familiar for any of your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. Many of them will be making money. We have two doctors. We're seeing them tonight, as a matter of fact. Again, this is our fourth meeting with them. They have a lot of money, but they're not building wealth. He's got it into like a checking, his business checking account. He's not, he's, you know, he's making, they're making significant income, but they don't have a clear strategy for where that money is going or whether it's actually moving them closer to their goal. So again, come back, ask the important questions. What are you trying to accomplish?
I got you. And, so it may not be the most appropriate saying in the world, but I've heard it deemed that money is a funny mistress. And if you do not pay attention to her, she will disappear. And if people are not actively watching, planning, working on, checking, observing their money, now we don't want to be obsessive. We don't want to develop greed and, that obsessive behavior about money, but they have to at least be monitoring it and paying attention to it and massaging the relationship with their money so that it doesn't flee and leave from them. Is that even remotely fair of a metaphor that if you're just putting it in a bank account, it's going to disappear on you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think anything in life is like that. And especially your finances is that if you just ignore it, that's what's it's going to be ignored. It's almost like a living thing that it's not going to respond the way that you want it to respond by itself. It's going to need that attention.
Gotcha. So learn to monitor your money, learn to know where your money's going in the plan, observe, watch, grow, and be very diligent to make sure that you follow that and get the money where it's supposed to go, and you don't go buy something flashy and new just because it's flashy and new. How about let's talk about some confidence that people get. So people, like you said, start to make more money. Maybe their financial position, they're seeing all of the accounts go up. Right. And they're starting to measure, how do they start to measure some of their financial confidence beyond just looking at the numbers and how many zeros are behind things and actually know what security is and what goals are being accomplished?
Well, again, I mean, it comes back to do your financial decisions that you're doing now align with your goals and values? Do you understand the risks that you're facing and have a plan to address them? Confidence comes from preparedness. It comes from planning. It comes from strategizing. It comes from asking and answering the tough questions. It means knowing that you have a strategy for life's transitions, whether that's retirement, protecting your family, growing a business, handling unexpected events, or creating a legacy for the next generation. That money that's been going up over time that you've been watching, sometimes it's unbelievable how easy it can go the other way.
Yes. And we've seen a lot of that too with a lot of our clients. And some people watch their accounts grow up, and specifically if they're running a good business and that operations account is going up, they get a little overconfident or they don't truly understand their financial position. Do you guys get into reviewing financial statements and making sure that they're not living and operating based on the account balance and the checking account versus what the true net position of the company is?
Well, part of our plan and what we do first, we do the value assessment. We make sure goals are aligned with values, and then we'll do a pretty deep financial fact finding. We have some software that we'll use, or maybe just a simple spreadsheet to see what that cash flow, monthly cash flow is going to be. And that's going to then lead into the other conversations. How much can you afford to put away towards retirement? Based on what your current expenses are and what your lifestyle requires you to spend. Especially in our world, there's a lot of private school tuition. There's, a lot of expenses there. So you want to make sure that, again, you're not overdoing it. You're not putting away money that you can't afford to, because that's not going to be good for anybody in the long term.
Very true. Very well said. So let's do this. Let's say somebody is getting a little long in the tooth, as they say, and they feel like they've just waited too long to really start looking into the exit plan, the estate planning, and they feel maybe embarrassed or overwhelmed that they're getting on 50, 55, or even in later, and they say, oh, it's just too late to start. How do you address that person?
Well, again, there's no perfect time to start planning, but the best time is today. That's wherever you are, whether it's you're a 25-year-old, a 35-year-old, 55-year-old, or a 66-year-old like I am. It doesn't make a difference. It's never too late. Start today. Don't push it down the road any further.
Love it. That's exactly right. Do it now. Do it now. So that's great. So let's look back on your own career. What's been the most important lesson about money, whether it's money or people or trust? What's been the most important lesson you've taken away from your career?
Well, I think the biggest lesson is that money is just rarely of just about money. Behind every financial decision is a person, a family, a dream, a responsibility, or a concern about the future. And I've learned that trust is earned slowly and consistently. It's built by listening and being transparent, doing it what you say you will do, and being there for clients not only when things are going well, but especially when uncertainty arises. And again, financial success is not always measured by returns or account balances. It's the real measure is whether someone's financial resources are helping them live the life they want, take care of the people they love, and create the impact they hope to make.
I love that. What a powerful lesson as well. So, David, if people want to take action today after hearing this conversation, what action should they take to you to find you to get the help that you provide?
Well, again, William, we've talked about this. Don't wait. Don't wait until there's a crisis or a major life event or a moment of uncertainty forcing you to make decisions under pressure. Take the time to step back, ask yourself, what matters most to me? What am I trying to accomplish? Are my financial decisions aligned with the future I want to create? It's not that you have to have everything figured out right away, but the first step is just going down that path. It's a journey, not an end destination.
And where do they find you specifically?
So I'm at KleinmanFinancial.com. You can email me, David@KleinmanFinancial.com, KLYMAN Financial. My cell phone is 201-898-6960. Or you can just book an appointment on my Calendly through the website or through my Calendly link, which I'm happy to send out. Available. You could text me or call me, whatever, just call direct.
Perfect. David, thank you so much for coming on to the show. It's been
Thank
an
you for
absolute
having me.
pleasure. To the rest of the audience, just remember that today we talked about financial planning, making that discipline, protecting your family, taxes, retirement, estate planning, insurance, everything. But build around what truly matters and learn your values. It doesn't come from trying to predict the future. Financial confidence comes from preparing for things with clarity, discipline, and trust. So I want you to take all of that information, go out into the world today and see the change. And be the change. We'll catch you right here next time on Pivotal Change.